Welcome. This is Cheryl at the Talking Information Center. Thanks so much for joining me. Today is Thursday, February 19th, 2026. I'm reading from the Taunton Daily Gazette, and the first article is entitled, Dighton Dad So Thankful for Bucket List Trip. Even though his beloved Patriots lost against the Seahawks in the Super Bowl, Dighton resident Aaron Tarver said he's just so thankful to attend the game and that it was a bucket list opportunity that I never thought I would check off. Aaron Tarver's son, Duncan Tarver, won free Super Bowl tickets in a Bud Light contest at Gillette and chose to take his dad as his plus one. Aaron is an Air Force veteran who has stage 4 cancer. I chose my dad because the last few years since his diagnosis with prostate cancer has been all about making memories, spending as much time as we can together. Duncan previously told the Gazette, I've watched lots of football with my dad, and never in a million years did I think we would have a chance to go to a Super Bowl together. In a subsequent interview after the Super Bowl, Aaron described the experience and shared his thoughts about the Patriots' performance in the big game. Here's what he said. What family did in San Francisco? The Super Bowl was located in a San Francisco Bay Area this year, and Aaron and Duncan made sure to take time to see the sights. We made sure that we went out and got a good scenic view of the Golden Gate Bridge, and you know, did some stuff like eating in Chinatown and having some San Francisco experiences, Aaron explained. In addition to winning Super Bowl tickets, the Bud Light contest also provided tickets to a Post Malone concert. It was a lot of fun, Aaron said of the concert. He did really good as far as bringing on the people and focusing on stuff throughout his career. It was a terrific concert. Aaron's take on Super Bowl. Aaron said that he thought that injuries affected the Patriots, who lost to the Seattle Seahawks in a lopsided 29-13 game. I'm watching Will Campbell, Patriots offensive lineman, get crushed. I was like, did he come back too early from a knee injury? Aaron said that Patriots quarterback Drake May was not also playing at his best, not what we typically had seen from Drake May, he explained. It led me to believe that the injury was a real issue to his shoulder. Aaron said that the Patriots' defense played well, but ultimately it was not enough to overcome struggles on offense. Defense was doing so well. We always just are holding out hope that Sam Darnold, Seahawks quarterback, will turn over the ball, or that the defense can make something happen, he said. The defense was so great, holding them to so many field goals, but at the same time, we couldn't even get into the field goal position. Asked if he was thinking, while he was watching the game, that the Patriots might make a comeback and win, similar to how former Patriots quarterback Tom Brady had done in a prior Super Bowl against the Atlanta Falcons, Aaron said, of course. I think we've gotten spoiled with watching decades of Tom do that, he explained. Thoughts on Patriots overall. Despite the disappointment of a Super Bowl loss, Aaron said, the team had still performed better than expected. We haven't had a playoff win in over 6 years, he said. I just wanted a playoff win. This team is still really young, he explained, adding he hopes the team will continue to perform well in future years. George W. Bush weighs in on George Washington. It seems everyone has a Substack these days, even President George W. Bush. The 43rd President of the United States launched his blog on the site February 16th with a 1,500-word tribute to another George, President George Washington. Few qualities have inspired me more than Washington's humility, Bush wrote. Our first president could have remained all-powerful, but twice he chose not to. In so doing, he set a standard for all presidents to live up to. The essay is part of a new bipartisan history initiative created by the group, More Perfect for the Country's 250th Anniversary. As part of the project, the group will post essays from public figures and historians on each American president up to President Barack Obama on a weekly Substack called In Pursuit. Among the forthcoming issues will be an essay on President Abraham Lincoln, written by Obama, one on President William Howard Taft, by Chief Justice John Roberts, and a tribute to President Theodore Roosevelt by President Bill Clinton. The project is led by Colleen Shogan, a former archivist of the United States, whom President Donald Trump fired without giving a reason in 2025. Trump is not included among the list of essayists on the project website. Bush, in his essay on Washington, reflected on the first president's willingness to cede power both as the Army's commander and as president, his loyalty to his country and his achievements, including avoiding war and stabilizing a burgeoning economy. By most historian accounts, one of the reasons Washington achieved all of this was by admitting he might not be up to the task. He summoned experts and let debates play out in front of him, wrote Bush. For me, that lesson meant recognizing what I didn't know as president, surrounding myself with advisors who did know what I didn't know, and listening to them. Also, Bush acknowledged Washington's flaws in the essay. Bush described the first president's ownership of other humans as a stain on his otherwise sterling private and public life. Still, Bush described Washington as an exceptional and indispensable man of integrity. Without him, there would be no America, and without America, the world would be a very different and much darker place. Freetown's TikTok star, Michaela Nogueira, shares a big life update. TikTok beauty influencer, Michaela Nogueira, announced her divorce from husband, Cody Hawken, this week after 2.5 years of marriage. Originally from East Freetown and now living in Quincy, Michaela has become a household name online, racking up over 17 million followers with her beauty tips, makeup tutorials, and little glimpses into her everyday life. Rising to fame in 2020, she's gone viral repeatedly, and last year, she became the only local influencer from Massachusetts to be named on Time Magazine's 2025 list of the 100 most influential creators of 2025. The Aponiconic Regional High School grad made Forbes 2025 list of top 50 creators, coming in at number 33, with an estimated $7.8 million in earnings. Nogueira also launched her own skincare line, POV Beauty Point of View, at the beginning of 2025. What happened to Michaela and Cody? At the beginning of 2021, Nogueira introduced the world to her new boyfriend, Cody Hawken, whom she met on Tinder, and she began sharing glimpses of their relationship online. By November of that year, the couple had become engaged in Boston, revisiting the spot of their first date, and in July 2023, they tied the knot in a lavish Newport wedding, attended by 175 guests, including several popular influencers. Throughout their time together, Nogueira and Hawken were open about his journey with addiction, including his sobriety struggles, a rehab stay in 2025, and multiple relapses, which they said put strain on their relationship. Then, on February 12th, just 2 days before Valentine's Day, she surprised fans by announcing their divorce on TikTok. I want to start this video by saying I appreciate you and I love you. And you're going to want to sit down for this video. I'm getting a divorce, she shared. She emphasized that the decision was mutual and amicable, saying, we both deserve to be happy. Nogueira explained that the decision had been made months prior, giving her time to heal before sharing it publicly. We were together for 5 years, married for 2, and they are some of the best memories of my life, she continued, memories that I will cherish forever, and I do not regret a single thing. Nogueira also addressed her followers to ask them not to connect the divorce to Hawkins' sobriety or addiction. Cody and I have been very open about his struggles with addiction, she explained. And I'm going to ask you, if you can, please leave that out of the conversation. They are two separate things. It's hard enough as it is to be an addict and to struggle to stay sober. Looking forward, Nogueira says she's healing, nervous but excited, ready to keep showing up for her fans with her beauty and her makeup content. In national news, modern tech helps and hinders the Guthrie case. Tools assist authorities but can hide suspects. Tucson, Arizona. The search for Nancy Guthrie is unfolding in the desert foothills north of Tucson and across digital networks, where investigators are working to piece together physical evidence and electronic traces left behind by her possible abductors. Authorities say a masked armed individual was captured on video, tampering with Guthrie's Google Nest doorbell camera. The FBI is handling ransom-related communications tied to the case. After officials released surveillance images, thousands of tips poured in within days. Deputies have executed search warrants, towed a gray Range Rover from a nearby parking lot, and confirmed they are analyzing unidentified DNA recovered at Guthrie's home. No arrests have been announced. Experts say that the case reflects how modern crime and modern investigations now unfold simultaneously in the physical world and online. It's a game of cat and mouse, said Milos Manick, director of Virginia Commonwealth University's Cybersecurity Center, in an interview with the Arizona Republic. Manick said, today's crimes often intersect with networked devices, cloud storage systems, and digital payment platforms. The same technology that allows homeowners to monitor cameras remotely or move money instantly also can be used to obscure activity or disrupt surveillance. Technology is changing. And as any technology can be used for noble purposes, it can also be used in nefarious ways, said Manick, hiding digital footprints. It was not immediately clear how the ransom notes tied the case were sent. Tucson television station KOLD reported the two ransom notes it received were not sent from the same IP address, a unique identifier associated with an internet connection. Manick said suspects could be replying on different privacy tools, including proxy chains, VPNs, the dark web, TOR networks, connections through burner devices, or local public Wi-Fi networks. Those tools can route internet traffic through multiple servers or locations, sometimes even across countries. It may appear that it's coming from a certain city or certain state or country, while it's really bounced off all around the world, said Manick. Even so, experts said technology does not guarantee invisibility. Investigators also assess behavior and patterns. Lance Lessing, a former supervisory special agent with 23 years at the FBI's Phoenix Field office, said he did not believe that the suspect was a professional criminal. He added, suspects frequently misjudge their own sophistication. A lot of times, criminals think they're smarter than they are, said Lessing. Even when people think they've covered their tracks, there's usually something left behind. Cameras and cloud data. The video of the masked individual tampering with Guthrie's doorbell camera shows the role Wi-Fi-capable home devices play in the modern cases. These devices are networked together, said Manick. You connect the timeline of events. Manick added, investigators can reconstruct digital timelines by correlating camera footage, device logs, and other metadata. But access to that data depends on storage policies, subscription services, and technical constraints. Homes and businesses increasingly use internet-connected cameras and smart systems, many of which store footage in the cloud. Video from one camera can be matched with footage from nearby properties or traffic systems, helping investigators reconstruct movements with precision. However, what's theoretically possible in practice is not always possible, said Manick. Lessing added, reviewing surveillance footage can be labor-intensive when large volumes must be analyzed. It's manpower-intensive, he said. Sitting, watching 10 hours of video, that's one person's day. Authorities have used a device known as a signal sniffer, mounted on a law enforcement helicopter in an attempt to detect Nancy Guthrie's pacemaker signal, according to reports from Fox News and News Nation, who reported the device was attached to a Pima County Sheriff's Department helicopter that was seen flying low over the Tucson area on February 3rd. Kevin Smith, spokesperson for the FBI's Phoenix Field Office, declined to comment on whether investigators were using such a device. Digital currency complicates investigations. Digital currency in physical crime has become more visible, too. A Bitcoin address was listed in a ransom note connected to the Guthrie case. Cryptocurrency is often perceived as anonymous, but experts say its structure is more complicated. A blockchain is an open-source database, essentially a public ledger that forms a permanent record of transactions, said Nathan Peterson of the Schwab Center for Financial Research. Once recorded, a transaction can't be altered or counterfeited. Every transfer is visible on the network, creating a permanent record of how funds move between wallets. But identifying the person behind a wallet is far more difficult. Finding the individual behind a Bitcoin address is nearly impossible, said Ken Gray, a former FBI agent and professor at the University of New Haven, in an interview with USA Today. Lessing said that when digital payments are involved, investigators often look beyond the transaction itself. They analyze communication, device data, surveillance, and other evidence that can connect online activity to a specific person. From the Colonial Pipeline ransomware attack to dark web marketplaces such as Silk Road, criminals have used cryptocurrency and anonymity networks to obscure their identities. In many cases, investigators later trace transactions and digital infrastructure. Home builders' sentiment remains subdued. Washington. U.S. home builder sentiment deteriorated in February, weighed down by persistently high land and construction cost, as well as still elevated house prices relative to incomes that are keeping prospective buyers on the sidelines, a survey showed on February 17th. The National Association of Home Builders Wells Fargo Housing Market Index eased 1 point to 36, remaining below the 50 break-even point for 22 straight months. Economists had forecast the index climbing to 38. Confidence has remained depressed despite attempts by the Trump administration to make housing more affordable, including purchases of mortgage-backed securities and banning institutional investors from buying single-family homes. Builders reduce their expectations for future sales as buyers report affordability challenges, which is contributing to declining consumer confidence for the overall economy, said NAHB Chairman Buddy Hughes. President Donald Trump's sweeping tariffs have raised prices for building materials and appliances, while his immigration crackdown has undercut labor supply. Building lots are also scarce. Soft housing demand has led to an overhang of unsold new homes, another challenge which confronts builders. Though the share of builders reporting cutting prices fell to a 9-month low of 36% from 40% in January, the NAHB said the average price reduction remained at 6%. The share using incentives was unchanged at 65%. It was the 11th consecutive month that this share has exceeded 60%. The survey measure of current sales conditions was steady at 41, while its gauge of future sales fell 3 points to 46. A measure of prospective buyer traffic dropped 2 points to 22. The solution for the housing market is the enactment of policies that will bend the construction cost curve, enabling additional supply of attainable housing, said NAHB chief economist Robert Dietz. On the positive side, easing inflation should continue to allow lower interest rates for mortgages and builder loans. Also in national news, DeSantis focuses on political futures. Florida governor and first lady embrace the MAGA policies. With Florida Governor Ron DeSantis' last regular session of the state legislature having passed its midpoint, the Republican chief executive and his wife, First Lady Casey DeSantis, appear focused on securing their political future, whatever it is. The governor is widely expected to run for president again in 2028. Casey DeSantis still could emerge as a candidate later, in 2026, to succeed her husband, although the governor's race is getting crowded, and led by Republican favorite U.S. Representative Brian Donalds, who's been endorsed by President Donald Trump. She's also now being talked of as a possible congressional candidate for the seat held by retiring U.S. Representative Neil Dunn, Republican from Florida. But the governor and his wife, this session, have already been redoubling their efforts to stake out policy positions popular with the Make America Great Again movement, forged by Trump. Ron DeSantis may even be closer to MAGA than Trump by demanding state regulations on hyperscale data centers, which the president wants to see advance, mostly unimpeded by states. Far-right strategist Steve Bannon told his followers that Trump was being deceived by tech brothers. DeSantis leaned into such comments, condemning in dystopian terms the spread of data centers powering artificial intelligence. Unregulated AI will lead to darkness and deceit, he warned when unveiling his AI Bill of Rights. If we try to go down that road, we're going to be poorer for it, as a culture and as a society, said DeSantis. Rural communities, a font of support for both Trump and DeSantis, are where the hyperscale data centers often land, draining electricity, water, and generating noise. A DeSantis-backed bill putting limits on data centers is moving forward in the state Senate, but hasn't gotten the attention in the House. Still, through his 7 years in office, DeSantis has declared and proven adept at playing to the political right. He declared a war on woke abolished diversity and equity programs, joined the president's anti-immigration efforts, and demonized the local spending, modeled after the federal government's Department of Government Efficiency. But as his time in office winds down, the DeSantises are finding new ways to stay relevant within the MAGA world. Casey DeSantis's Healthy Florida First initiative is rooted in the vaccine-wary policies of Health and Human Services Secretary Robert F. Kennedy Jr., who also has helped to undermine public trust in conventional medicine. Kennedy, promoting a Make America Healthy Again platform, has attacked food and big karma to the delight of Trump's voting base. A KFF Washington Post poll in the fall of 2025 found that about 4 in 10 parents identify as MAHA supporters, 6 in 10 among Republicans, and 8 in 10 among Republicans' MAGA parents. Now, Florida's First Lady is following Kennedy's lead. We're doing everything we can in the free state of Florida to drive accountability, Casey DeSantis said at recent appearance, highlighting Florida's Department of Health findings of what the agency claims are elevated levels of heavy metals and other possible toxins in candy, infant formula, and later some popular bread brands. The State Department of Health's findings, though, have drawn criticism. The candy analysis, for example, has not gotten scientific peer review. And even the agency, headed by Dr. Joseph Ladapo, another vaccine skeptic, acknowledges the findings are not definitive. The National Confectioners Association jumped on the state's analysis, calling it misguided and failing to rely on scientifically accepted standards. Well, that ends our segment for today. Thanks again for joining me, and I wish you a wonderful week ahead.